Hello, everybody, and welcome into episode number 225 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
We don't know either. That's the end. I don't know where I'm starting. Okay, so I wanted to kick us off with a historical correction. You guys know Ben Franklin?
Yes. Oh, this is a correction of history, not like we got something wrong on a podcast 2 years ago.
Correct.
Okay, got
it. This is a correction of people attribute a quote to him that's not really actually what he said.
Okay.
Do you guys know any famous Ben Franklin quotes?
I will never drive a car ever again. That was probably incorrectly attributed to him.
The only two certainties in life are death and taxes.
I think that's one of them, yeah, but that's not the one I'm talking about.
You really should not fly a kite with a key attached to the cord.
That gives you a bad hair day.
Damn, I love me some beer.
Okay, well, that's actually...
Am I closer? I'm getting
closer,
there.
Yeah.
Oh, is it...
Turkeys should be our national bird because they are delicious.
No, I'm trying to remember the Ben Franklin quote.
Beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy.
That's the one.
All
and they sell this in Old City Philly everywhere, right?
Yep.
And he didn't actually say it. He was actually talking about wine.
Okay.
So very different. So in a 1779 letter, he's biblical mentions of wine, and he remarks, "Behold the rain which descends from heaven upon our vineyards. There it enters the roots of the vines to be changed into wine, a constant proof that God loves us and loves to see us happy." So yeah, he wasn't talking about beer. He was talking about wine.
I still think it holds up, though.
Yeah, I don't think it matters what the topic is. I think generally the result is the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, but, you know, I've been drinking a lot of wine lately, so I wanted to give it some love.
Yeah, I saw one the other day. It was over a picture of Abraham Lincoln and said, "I would never have voted for Donald Trump." So I think that's probably misquoted.
Abraham Lincoln, everything you read on the internet is true.
That is correct.
Okay, so...
And I don't want to go to that play.
Yeah. Plays are dangerous.
Sorry, too soon.
Okay, so
spoiler
Michael,
alert.
Kick us off with your fact.
Okay, so the 1980 Winter Olympics.
Cool.
Nick, what do you know?
Miracle on Ice.
Thank you.
Lake Placid.
That's the one.
Yeah.
So...
one of the greatest sports movies of all time, if not the greatest, in my opinion.
It definitely makes my top three, for sure.
Yeah, it's about America.
Major League was about the 1980 Winter Olympics?
That is very true. Not a lot of people know that.
Okay, cool.
So, anyway, the Olympic Village at the 1980 Olympics in Lake Placid.
Uh-huh.
My question is very simple.
Uh-huh.
What is it now?
What is it now?
Like, what is the name of the city?
No.
What did they turn it into?
Yeah, what did they turn it into? Because obviously hosting the Olympics, they got to build up all these things. They have to build
all the infrastructure and all that type of stuff. I would assume it's like a ski lodge or a summer resort or some sort of like, I always have in mind like the place from Dirty Dancing, like the lodge they go to in Dirty Dancing, it's that kind of place.
Okay. I haven't seen Dirty Dancing.
Okay.
That's on my list of movies.
I will add it to the list.
I actually haven't seen it either, so that's okay.
That's one of those classics. Everyone's like, it's so great, and I'm worried about seeing it because the bar has been set really high.
Yeah, right. It's going to disappoint.
Yeah, so it's not.
If you watch the remake first, I'm sure the original
will be much better, yeah.
So I'm going to guess that resort is not correct.
Resort is not correct.
Okay, I think that it would be weird if it's like a shopping mall that seems too normal for you to be interested. To be asking it as an interesting fact.
Sure. Paintball field.
Not a paintball field.
No. Oh, damn.
I'm going to go kind of out of left field and say like a prison. Like it's like a holding cell or like something like really.
Yeah, hit it dead on the money. It's a federal prison.
Wow. Yeah. Look at Lindsay knocking it out of the park.
Heck yeah.
Basically, this is from the Smithsonian Magazine. Uh-huh. And they talk about how, you know, hosting the Olympics, they have all the infrastructure built up. And then when the Olympics leave the city, the question is, what do you do with all the stuff?
Right.
So in this case, Lake Placid, New York, they made a federal prison, and it's still operating today.
All right. Well, that makes sense. If you're going to put the money into the infrastructure, you might as well do something with it afterwards.
Absolutely. Well, and that's the thing. If you think about Olympic villages in general, it's where all the athletes go. So you got to think it's pretty well protected for people getting in.
Yeah.
You can just reverse engineer.
The security is good. Just exactly. Turn it around.
Exactly.
And it's smaller spaces. And
sure. I don't know if the cells are the same as, you know.
I think it says something about the conditions of our athletes when they compete in the Olympics, that they immediately turn the rooms into prison cells afterwards.
Right. Well, what was it?
They're too busy in Olympic villages having sex and playing sports
so
to
you know
really
what?
Worry about
the
it.
The very first thing that came to my mind when he said, what do they use it for now, was whorehouse. That was the first thing that came to my mind, but I guess that probably wasn't going to be right.
Got to do it in your twin bed. Twin bed SNL sketch. Love it.
Well, I was going to say they both have overnight guests. So.
Yeah, it works out.
That's pretty good.
There's probably some conjugal visits going on at that prison now.
So I don't know if you would know the answer to this question. Sure. How soon after the Olympics ended did it open as a prison?
That's one of the things I'm still looking through it. It doesn't, I don't think it has an official like open date at this particular article. Mm-hmm. But it looked like it's still operating today. So you're talking, 35, 30, 40 years later.
It probably wasn't instantaneous, but it also probably wasn't, 2012.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They would have had to build it back up. They would have lost a lot of the infrastructure if it was abandoned.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen all those pictures of the abandoned Olympic fields and Brazil or mm-hmm. Beijing,
sure.
or they spend billions of dollars building it all up, and then the one thing that never ever leaves my head, I can't quite remember exactly where it was, but it's the bobsled track or the luge track from some Winter Olympic place.
I want to say Russia.
Wait, is that the one, the Jamaica one?
No, it's not the Jamaica. They've never had a Winter Olympics in Jamaica, to my knowledge. But
no, the Jamaican bobsled team is what I was referring to.
I know. Jeez. I don't think it was the one they competed in. One of the ones they did. It may have been. But you see it after the fact, and
right.
it's there's no snow on the ground, and the grass is growing up inside of the chutes, and it's all in disrepair, and it just looks like a really old water park that's been abandoned.
I love abandoned theme parks.
You into the creepy thing?
No,
I don't know.
I just love
looking at pictures of them. I don't
really?
Know. It's just a
there's,
fun thing.
There's
I love.
One here in Maryland. I think it's in Laytonsville.
I gotta go.
And I remember going to it as a kid.
Really?
1985 or 1986, I remember it was run down then, but it's been closed for 25 years. So it is absolutely that the creepy train with the clown face on the front of the train that's the weeds growing through it and it's all rusted out. One of the eyes has fallen out.
I think what I love about
nightmare inducing
abandoned things, I like to pretend that I'm Indiana Jones going back and studying these. I went to archaeology camp for a few years as a kid because,
that
of course, I
doesn't
did.
Surprise
not,
me.
Not at all.
And I loved it. I found a wagon wheel. I got to map my plot. I found some old stuff, glued some pottery back together. It was real furnace from the 1800s.
Wow.
It was out of control. But anyway, this isn't important. Archaeology camp is amazing. And I love abandoned theme parks.
And actually, to answer an earlier question of yours, Lindsay, I actually found how quickly they converted it into a prison.
Oh, cool.
It says here, a few months after
just a few months after. So it was the plan was in place before the Olympics, probably.
And
And the prison is Federal Correction Institution, Raybrook.
Raybrook, Federal Correction Institution. All right. Well,
crushing your fact today, Michael.
Yeah. Thousand inmates
Nick, you want to go?
I can go. That's not a problem. All right. Mine is not nearly as interesting.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
I love it when we
set the bar low.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm setting the bar low. So you can come back to me and say, no, Nick, that was a great fact. It really sounded amazing. All right. So as you guys know, and everybody else may or may not know, I'm having a second child.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Everybody makes bad decisions. But luckily, it is just one more child. I actually have friends of mine that had two, and they just wanted a third, and they had twins. So
oh,
they got
wow.
a third and a fourth. Yeah. So it's one of those oh, God. But what is the longest interval between the birth of twins?
Oh, ever.
Okay.
Ever. So, I have cousins who are twins. Mm-hmm. One of them was born on August 15th at 8:35 a.m., and the other one was born at 8:42 a.m.
Right.
Sure. 7 minutes in between the two babies. What is the longest interval between the birth of twins?
And this is according to, what... Who tracks this data?
I don't know. This is on. It was on an amazing facts sort of website that I looked at, but I then went and researched it and found it.
Okay,
right.
Cool. Yeah. So we're verified.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I fact checked it.
Okay, so I know that births can go for days.
Yes.
And I've never had a child. I don't know a lot more beside that it freaks me out. And Lord willing, I have new respect for my mother now that I'm talking to friends that are starting to have kids, and they tell me way too many details. And I'm like, Mom, I love you. How did you do this? So I would say 32 hours.
Okay.
I think it's long enough because there's twins that I know that have had different birthdays, but I think 32 hours seems right.
Yeah. Wasn't the New Year's baby it was either in 2017 or 2016 was a twin. So the twin brother was the last baby born in 2016.
Aww.
And the New Year's baby was the first baby born.
How cute.
It was 11:51 and 12:01.
Super cute.
Yeah.
I love it.
So here's the real question. They get different birthday parties, right? They can't have the birthday party on the same day.
I think you get old enough.
And is one of them on one end of a cutoff and the other one of them be in seventh grade and the other one will be in sixth grade?
I somehow don't think that happens.
No, I don't think so.
What's your guess though, Michael?
You know, I have no frame of reference for this at the moment.
I don't know, but you're a human being. You know, children are born.
Yes, I do know children are born.
Please tell me we don't have to have a birds and bees.
No,
talk.
No, we do. No, we're good. I don't know. 32 hours is right about that sweet spot where I was thinking.
Yeah, okay.
So
that was me being sarcastic. You just taking my answer since I was already right.
I'm going to go up. I'm going to say, because it's, I don't know. I'm going to say like 50 hours.
50 hours.
I don't know.
50 okay. hours.
Wow. I don't know.
Michael is closest without going over.
Whoa.
Yeah, but he's not close in any way, shape, or form at all. 87 days.
Wait, what?
87 days is the longest interval between the birth of twins.
I wish that you asked it in how many days instead of hours. That would have given some indication.
Probably. But yeah, I believe the scenario was one of the babies was premature.
Oh.
Okay.
And I don't know if it was a natural birth or a C-section, but the one of them had a health problem, so they took it out and put it in the NICU and made sure it was all good. And then the other one they left in to like final gestation.
Oh, wow.
It was 87 days. 87
days. Wow.
Yeah.
That is considerably longer than I thought.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And it's also one of those, like, if they came at the regular time, do you really want a baby in there for 12 months? That seems like a long time.
It's a long time. That's right. That some would call it a year.
Yeah. You would.
Some would say that.
Cool. So my fact is not about either prisons or babies.
Hey.
It's about something way more interesting. And I spent way too long of time researching this and went down so many rabbit wormholes. So spam.
Uh-huh.
I started because I was getting a bunch of spam emails.
I was going to say the email or the meat?
But I'll get there.
Okay.
Nobody saw it, but meat in quotations.
And at the bottom of the spam emails, you have to include an unsubscribe button. And you have to unsubscribe
legally
after 10 days. So I was like, oh, I want to look into this law because, you know, we've had a lot of partisan politics
and
the world's kind of in this negative space right now. So I was like, maybe we can all agree about email spam being annoying.
That could be the one thing that joins us all together and make sure that, you know, everything moves forward happily.
Yeah. People were really unhappy with this bill.
with the bill to unsubscribe from spam?
So the Canned Spam Act 2003, some people were like, this is great and amazing.
It's called the Canned Spam Act.
Canned Spam Act. Okay. Yeah, it's actually an acronym.
Okay.
Any
of
guesses
course it is.
As to
this
what
is
the
one of those
acronym
things,
is?
I bet you they put more thought into the acronym than they did into the bill
itself. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I can tell you that
the
acronym...
Consumer Advocacy...
Networking.
National.
The
national.
Spam part of it is not an acronym.
Okay.
Just the CAN part of it.
What is it?
Oh, wait, no. The spam is part of it. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. The spam is part of it. I was just
looking
at the wrong
thing. Consumers against network spam.
No.
Okay. That's a great guess.
I took a shot.
Yeah.
Controlling the Assault of Non-Solicited Pornography and Marketing Act.
Okay.
So I'll say that again. Controlling the Assault of Non-Solicited Pornography and Marketing Act. So it says things like if you opt out of an email, you have to, you know, 10 games or whatever. So I was looking on the Federal Trade Commission website as to what the penalties are.
Okay.
So what is the maximum penalty per email if you don't file this or don't follow this law and this compliance?
The maximum penalty
per email?
So it says each separate email in violation of the Canned Spam Act is subject to penalties of up to blank amount.
Okay.
So non-compliance can be costly. This is like their regulation for businesses of how you would market emails officially.
You have to have a stick.
Yeah, and you have to make sure that your subject of your email is truthful, and there's all sorts of laws about it.
Right.
So
those
you have
pills
to
won't help? Never mind.
Yeah. You have to identify the message as an ad. You have to tell the recipients how they can opt out. You have to honor the requests within this certain 10 days. And, you know.
Otherwise, you will be fined X amount of dollars.
Yeah. So
per
what?
Violation.
Per email.
Right. Each email is a violation.
Not an email brand. It's per email
it's not
up to.
One set out. It's all 2.4 million people you sent it to.
Yeah. What I don't know is what the various levels of amounts are. There's not a lot of people that have been fined because sometimes they settle in civil. Sometimes it's criminal. People have gone to jail for organizing this because they'll consider theft of your bandwidth.
Really?
So there's people in jail for this.
I would love to meet the guy that was arrested for theft of bandwidth.
He's got a Wikipedia page.
I would not have thought that they had those strict penalties for this because I wouldn't think they would legitimately want to enforce any of them.
Who? Why wouldn't they want to enforce
them? The government.
I bet you the government.
I'm sure the government has a lot of laws out there all the time that they have no intention of enforcing anyway.
But
the whole banking crisis, how many people went to jail?
But if you're a representative, I'm sure you're getting spam emails too.
That's
it's
true.
Not
it
like
does
you're
affect
sheltered
you
like that. There was I saw a stat that at one point Bill Gates was getting like 4 million emails a year of just spam.
Sure. I don't doubt that. Yeah. Why wouldn't he come up with something to
prevent
that?
That's also the thing. I used to work in the nonprofits, and this was actually a big thing working with members, is because if they told you, hey, we don't want to receive these emails anymore, you had to follow that because of this law. I remember it specifically, my boss going, no, seriously, this is one of those things. You really got to know.
All right. So how much money per violation?
Yeah,
per
email. And this is according to their website. I don't know how they came to this number. I don't know how it added up, but it says up to. So this is the maximum amount per email.
Per email. Okay.
Per email.
I'm going to say it's something stupid. I'm going to say it's like $10,000 an email.
Per email?
Per email.
Oh, see, I'm thinking the exact other way. I'm thinking if you're going to target
2/100ths of a cent or something.
No, like I was going to say like $500 an email.
Okay.
Where it's large enough to where when you send out, like think about a spam email in as a, just kind of as a thought.
Uh-huh.
You're sending out a ton of them.
Yeah, you're sending out hundreds of thousands or millions of them.
I'm not sending a spam email to Lindsay.
Macy's has an email list of 32 million email addresses or something like that. So if they send out one to everything, it's 32 million. That's why I want to say it's a ridiculous number, because nobody would have done the math on it, right? Like, they wouldn't have been thorough enough to figure out that $10,000 an email would equate to, like, $3.2 trillion if you were to get Macy's for it or something like that.
I can tell you that as of March 2017, the entirety of the month, 56.87% of email traffic worldwide was spam email. So over half of email in the world is spam, considered spam.
You know, I have an email account I don't use anymore. I'm certain over half of that is spam as well.
Yeah, I got an email just from a sales stuff, you know.
Right.
And they have other rules, like if you purchase something on Amazon and they send you the confirmation receipt, they can include some marketing messages in that because it's a... There's certain terms for it, but
yeah, it'd be like the CVS receipt is 35 yards long.
Right.
It's the same thing with a receipt from whoever via email.
Yeah. So that was exempted, and some people said that didn't go too far. But anyway, so you said 10,000.
Yeah.
What are you saying, Michael?
I'm saying 500 in email.
500. So the actual answer, according to the FTC, $40,654.
All right.
I told you.
Per email.
Yeah.
And then
still closer without going over.
Yeah. And then they list through the whole thing about how you can.
You said 50,000.
No, I said 10,000.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
You both were a little bit off.
Still.
Yeah. So any ideas as to why it's called spam? This was my next journey down the hole.
I would assume because it has something to do with the meat, right?
Kind of.
It's a bunch of stuff that you didn't ask for.
And don't want.
Some people in World War II considered it a delicacy, actually.
Sure.
Hawaii, still big fans of spam.
Yeah.
They have spam carving contests. I remember going to a minor league baseball game as a kid, and they had a spam carving contest, and I was too late to enter, and I was so mad.
That can't be a real thing.
It is, spam carving. You can win scholarships. You can win a lot of money.
Where was that scholarship opportunity when I was looking for college?
Are you a good sculptor of spam?
I don't know. It's a skill I'd never tried. I don't know if I have it or not.
If you were to send out 3.2 million emails at $40,000 per violation, it would be a $128 billion fine.
Time to sign up for some mailing lists.
Yeah. So you have to report it. You have to go through the website to file a complaint. It's this whole big thing. I don't think you as an individual can have the legal right to sue the corporation, but
can get involved in a class action lawsuit.
It's a whole big shenanigan situation. But so you guys both are Monty Python fans. Yes.
Of course.
Have you seen the Monty Python sketch where they're in a restaurant and every single food menu is spam?
It's spam, yeah.
Yeah.
I have not seen that one, but
we'll put it in the link dump. It's hilarious. And so a lot of the people early ages of the internet, this article describes them as geeks, and they were playing World of Warcraft, and they would just repeat spam, 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 spam as a way to kind of troll other people.
Uh-huh.
And from there, that evolved into the name for junk email.
Right. No, that makes sense. I don't know if World of Warcraft is the right thing.
Yeah, so it came about from this Monty Python sketch, because they would just quote the lyrics of the spam, 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 ham and spam into this chain. I was like, how is Monty Python the reason that we call spam
something
email?
Spam.
Yeah, I just thought
it
was
incredible. Is that where Spamalot comes from?
So Spamalot, the musical,
came
from a line in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Knights of the Round Table.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They say specifically, we eat a lot of ham and Spamalot.
Right.
It's like, no. I'm not going to sing it, but
yeah,
it's a specific line of Knights of the Round Table.
Okay.
Hence why it's called Spamalot. And people on Broadway were pissed. They wanted them to change the name.
Really?
Yeah.
Because of spam?
there was another musical called Camelot coming out at the same time.
Oh, which would have been like exactly the same. It would have been like the King Arthur story, but from the Monty Python perspective.
Right.
Yeah. The lawyers of Camelot, you know, kind of poked the Spamalot folks and they were like, hey, so people might get confused by this. So you might want to change the name. And Spamalot was like, nah.
We're good.
Yeah. I remember seeing it on Broadway and it was incredible.
It was really good. It's a great show.
Except they cut out the best scene from Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Which was?
There's only one best scene.
I mean, that's not true at
all. I'm kidding. I know.
Please tell me they still had the coconuts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
it was just two guys on stage.
Yeah. The Black Knight, I would say, is probably the best scene.
It's got to be up there.
The whole wedding party massacre.
I'm in the minority of this. That in jest because I just...
The Frenchman at the top of the
the witch burning scene.
Oh, the witch
and he goes, "What do we burn apart from witches? More witches!" And I every time that I see that scene, I cry because I laugh so hard. And I was so excited to see it in this musical. I was like, "Man, I got to bring tissues with me. I'm gonna start sobbing from hysterical laughter in this theater." And then that scene wasn't in it, and I was very upset. I wanted to hear that in musical form. But anyway, we'll put all that in the link dump. Yep. And so, long story short, spam a lot, spam, email spam. It's a lot of money.
That's how you go. Yeah, long story short, that's way down the wormhole.
I know. I told you I spent 2 hours today researching various forms of spam.
Right. We went from email to Broadway productions.
Yeah.
That's a pretty long train of thought.
Yeah. That used to be a game show, right? Where you had to get from one word to the other.
Yes. Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's super weird. But it's a great, interesting fact. That's what we're looking for, right?
Yeah. Here's another question that's similar to weird, which is pretty much everything, right? So Library of Congress, we know that they document all of our tweets.
Yes.
Yes.
What parts of the internet do you think they should document? Because they're doing it now.
YouTube comments.
Just for future presidential vetting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, well, that's great, but when you were 13, you were on this music video.
Right.
I'm interested to see political elections over the next 20 years.
Oh, it's going
to
be great.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. Yeah, yeah. Do you recognize Nazi lover 157? Oh, God.
I'd like to end my candidacy at this moment.
So, what part of the internet should they be? So, obviously, the Library of Congress is documenting these historical books and everything that's culturally related to the United States and our history.
A podcast?
Yeah.
Podcast, okay.
I would think they'd already be doing that, though.
I would think
they would have started recently.
Not like everything, but some, you got to figure some.
Yeah. I mean, this is episode 225. We've been doing this for almost 5 years now. Somebody better put it in the Library of Congress. It's necessary.
So, they've been saving websites and other online material, and they've amassed over a petabyte of data, web comics, web archives, and web cultures web archives.
Okay.
So they're saving websites, and they want it to be a specific snap in time, right? So you can go back and see Amazon's website in 2000, right? Or whatever it is.
Right.
So what
District
websites...
District Trivia in 2009.
Right, yeah. So what websites would you think the Library of Congress should save? Because I have a list here.
I didn't want to be the first one to say it.
Yeah, the answer is always porn.
I cannot speak to them saving porn,
okay.
But I know that they have an entire...
I've got a couple of hard drives.
Oh, jeez.
If they want like a whole big backlog, I think I might be able to help them out with a starting point.
They have Equestria Daily. It's a major fan site for Bronies, the fans of My Little Pony.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Got it.
Great Bob's Burger episode, spoof, if you had a chance to watch it. You're the Man Now Dog. It's a big popular site. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
I can't say it.
Dictionary of Wonderful Things, the Internet Meme Database.
Wait, I have a thought. Right. I have a thought.
Yeah.
Urban Dictionary.
Top of the list.
Yes.
Is that number one?
Well, it's not number one on their thing, but it's the first one that's listed in archived website when you go to Web Cultures Web Archives on libraryofcongress.gov or loc.gov. And so, yeah, the Urban Dictionary from 2005, hilariously 420 2005.
Naturally.
Is a screenshot of Urban Dictionary, and it's on the Library of Congress's website.
Is it just screenshots, or are they like fully functional websites of back way back when?
Like the Wayback Machine or whatever that site is?
You can click around, and I don't know if it's still going through the servers or how, but it's like a snapshot of what their website looked like and what it did. So
you can click around, though. Like, the links in it take you to the appropriate pages
from
the time.
Probably not the full probably not the whole everything.
But like the original Google was you would write something out, like stick it in an envelope and mail it to Google, and then they'd mail you back your results.
Somebody just sent me.
I thought that was Jeeves. I thought he was a guy that sat in a room.
Yeah, it was just a guy. Just a butler with the silver platter on the tray.
And he's sitting there by himself with a tuxedo in a room.
Right.
Somebody just sent me a YouTube video of, it's a comedy video of, what if Google was a guy?
Uh-huh.
And it's just a guy at a desk.
Yes.
He's just like, I can't believe this.
Yeah, I have seen that. That's a great video.
Right.
Drop that in the link dump too.
On a side note, in relation to Urban Dictionary, when was it founded?
When was Urban Dictionary founded?
Yeah.
2002.
I was going to say like 98.
Yeah.
No, this is, I mean 1999.
99.
Oh, okay.
1999, yeah.
So we were right there, 98, yeah. 2002.
Yeah, exactly.
By a college freshman. And most of the definitions are from 2003. And at the start of 2014, this is what is listed in the description of the Library of Congress's website about Urban Dictionary. It featured over 7 million definitions.
Okay.
And 2,000 new daily entries were being added.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'm in Urban Dictionary. I'm like a fifth definition for something.
Are you
what,
really?
Nick yeah, Groves?
Yeah. I am the part of the definite. I think it was for Bermuda. It's probably been removed.
What is it? Was
a player? Can we look up Urban Dictionary Bermuda and see if it's there?
Was it like a player just being funny? Or
no,
what?
No. This was way before we even started doing the trivia thing. This was just like one of my friends was a tech guy and he like...
Oh.
Edited Urban Dictionary to include like a definition of me. I don't even remember what it was for.
You gotta have a screenshot of that as your phone background.
Yeah,
even though I wouldn't want to be on Urban Dictionary. So
yeah. Oh no, it definitely wasn't for a good thing. I'm curious if it's still there. I haven't thought about that in years.
Just take any two random nouns,
uh-huh.
and it is something sexual on Urban Dictionary.
Oh, absolutely.
It is something sexual.
The Bermuda Blossom.
Ooh. I don't want to know. I don't know. This is a PG podcast. PG right. podcast. But let's wrap it up and let's think of our secret phrase.
All right. I've got two you can choose from.
Ooh.
One of them was just recently sitting by yourself in a tuxedo.
Ooh.
Which
okay.
I thought you might like. And the other one was just a random statistic. 56.87%.
I like sitting alone in a tuxedo.
Okay.
I
sitting
like
by yourself in a tuxedo. That is your secret phrase for episode 225.
Yeah. And if you were mad the podcast didn't get posted on time last week, I'm going to throw Michael under the bus, but we got it this week. He's yep. back. It's all going to be good.
There were slight technical difficulties, and I do apologize for the late nature. However, it was posted Monday morning. A little late, but it was posted Monday morning. So I do apologize to the listeners that were looking for their Monday morning commute. That's on me.
Yeah.
No worries. I just like it because
you can reach them at Lindsay at.
Yeah. Well, no, usually you're just so perfect. So I got to knock you down a peg. I'm high from my prison answer.
There you go.
And last two quick real housekeeping things. We don't normally do this, but I want to. Thursday, 80s, 90s trivia night at Franklin Hall. So DC, check that out.
Yep.
Free entry. We're giving away Paula Abdul, New Kids on the Block tickets.
Yep.
Boys to Men tickets.
At the Verizon Center.
Yeah,
that
at the
concert.
Verizon show. Yeah.
June 22nd, Thursday night, Franklin Hall.
Yeah.
Paula Abdul, our newest Twitter follower.
Yeah. Yeah, Paula. She following us. And then number two, we're doing Game of Thrones. We're doing two events. We got an undercard that's kind of going to be the light warm-up. You can win tickets to the main event, which is where we're going to give away $500 cash prize. That's
right.
Thursday, July 13th at Penn Social. And the undercard is July 6th at Boardroom.
Yeah.
So
and
don't miss them.
Depending upon how many tickets are bought for that event, we may be upping the prize.
Yeah.
So the more friends you get to buy tickets, the more money will be on the line.
Yeah. districttrivia.com/themed events. So check those out for the DC folks. Everybody else, you probably already tuned out anyway.
Yep.
But this is the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
We don't know either.
Bye.